Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities. A skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The debate surrounding a bill allowing Floridians to fire warning shots without facing a long prison term may be pitting state prosecutors against the measure's supporters.
The problem I have is generic characterizations that renegade prosecutors somewhere are arbitrarily trying to disadvantage folks who did nothing wrong.
We don't have but about three in the state of Florida. If we'll get rid of those, we won't have a problem.
Also this week, a report shows hate crime incidents rose in Florida, but experts warn the numbers are unreliable.
Where you have law enforcement leaders who are pushing that issue or interested in that issue, you get much better reporting and, in fact, much higher numbers.
We'll also check into a proposed law to force politicians to live in the same districts their voters do, why it's so hard to find good presidential help for the state's public universities, and we might shoot off some fireworks, too. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. If you thought there was a lot of talk about Florida's Stand Your Ground law in 2013, it looks like there will be even more talk and possible controversy in 2014. A group of state lawmakers gave the go-ahead this week to a bill associated with Florida's Stand Your Ground law. But as Sasha Cordner reports, some say the changes could go further, while others believe the measure decriminalizing firing a warning shot won't do much at all.
The aim of the so-called warning shot bill is to make it clear that people can show a gun or fire a warning shot without fear of a lengthy prison sentence. Some have even likened those who'd use the bill to cartoon gunslinger Yosemite Sam.
Yosemite Sam!
It's Yosemite Sam!
Yosemite Sam!
Yosemite. Yeah, Yosemite Sam! The roughest, toughest he-man, stuffest hombre has ever crossed the Rio Grande. And I ain't no mamby-pamby. Now all of you skunks, clear out of here!
Yosemite Sam may get a lot of laughs with his warning shot bit, but the bill already moving through both chambers is no laughing matter to the Florida legislature. It's sponsored by two Republicans, Baker Senator Greg Evers and Polk City Representative Neil Cumby. Cumby says he wants to address the unintended consequences of Florida's 10 to 20 life law.
When did this start making sense that we put people in prison for 20 years who've not physically harmed anybody? There's a problem here. There's a conflict between 10 to 20 life and Stand Your Ground. The governor's task force recognized that, and they made a recommendation to the legislature that we do something about it.
The bill is inspired by Marissa Alexander, a Jacksonville woman who received a 20-year prison sentence for firing a warning shot during alleged domestic violence dispute. She initially claimed Stand Your Ground, but a judge said her situation didn't qualify. She's since served part of that sentence as she awaits a new trial. Greg Newburn, the Florida director for the group Families Against Mandatory Minimum, says there are many stories similar to Alexander's. And during a recent Senate Criminal Justice Committee hearing on the bill, he recounted the story of Don Milner, an 81-year-old man who'd never been arrested before the day he decided to show his gun.
In January 2012, he and his wife went to a lake home that they owned, where a group of squatters had broken in and were living illegally. At some point, Mr. Milner told them to leave, and a 6'2", 23-year-old squatter refused, became aggressive, and his tone and mannerisms made Mr. Milner fear that this person was either going to hurt him or hurt his wife.
Newburn says Milner later reached into his truck and grabbed a revolver,
for which he had a valid concealed carry license, and he never took it from his holster. Put it down by his side, and he told the man, if you don't back off, you're going to get hurt. Mr. Milner's wife called the police. Police came out, they questioned everyone, and stunningly, they arrested Mr. Milner and took him to jail.
Newburn says when Milner later posted bond, he got a letter from the state attorney's office that stated he'd be formally charged with aggravated assault with a firearm. He faced a 3-year mandatory minimum, and if he didn't cooperate, could have been jailed for up to 20 years.
His wife, who's 84, was left to wonder what would happen to her if he went to prison for 3 years or, God forbid, 20. I won't give you the full description that Mr. Milner gave of the prosecutor, but he described her as hyper-aggressive. And fortunately for Mr. Milner, in November of 2012, his case was dismissed by a judge who said that he was acting lawfully. But he was lucky.
Milner will always have a criminal record in Florida despite the judge deeming him innocent. And Inverness Republican Senator Charlie Dean says that needs to be fixed. He'd like to see the bill expunge the records of those deemed innocent.
I think somewhere we need to protect the innocent person's record of that, too, because absolutely, although he may never need it, had he been 40 years younger and had an application somewhere in his life, it would show that he had a charge placed against him, and I think that's wrong.
And the National Rifle Association's Marion Hammer, a bill supporter, says she blames prosecutors.
Unfortunately, if you are suddenly attacked and you pull a gun that you're licensed to carry for self-defense to chase off an attacker, and the attacker runs away and no harm is done, you could still be prosecuted. You could become low-hanging fruit for some abusive prosecutor. Prosecutorial discretion doesn't mean they can violate the intent of the law or the Constitution. We hope this bill will put a stop to that.
But Alachua County State Attorney Bill Cervone took issue with Hammer's and similar comments made by Bill's sponsor, Evers.
Consider taking ag assault out of the 1020 life altogether. I'll tell you this, it is the hardest of the decisions we make, ag assault,
okay,
for 1020 life.
Okay.
But please don't characterize all of Florida's 2,000 prosecutors,
okay,
as being some sort of renegade. There is another side, or nobody would have been arrested, nobody would have been before court anyhow.
Evers later apologized, and Cervone says his fellow state attorneys are willing to work with him on the bill. And the measure passed unanimously. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
A hate crime report compiled by the Florida Attorney General's Office shows a 22% statewide increase in hate crimes in 1 year. But as Jessica Palumbo tells us, hate crime experts say such reports are severely flawed because most offenses go unreported or unprosecuted.
In the summer of 2012, a white Port St. Joe man shot one of his black neighbors in the head. The Gulf County Sheriff's report says Walton Butler left the man bleeding while he finished his dinner. When Butler was arrested, he told police he didn't see what the big deal was because he only shot up, and then he used a racial slur. A recent report shows the incident was one of 170 hate crimes Florida law enforcement agencies reported that year. That's an increase from 139 the year before. In keeping with the trend, more than half were motivated by race.
Hate crimes tend to proliferate in areas where communities are changing ethnically, racially, and so on, and typically when those communities are reaching a tipping point.
That's Southern Poverty Law Center senior fellow Mark Potok. His organization advocates against discrimination with education campaigns and lawsuits. He says all the best research suggests Florida's actual yearly hate crime number is somewhere north of 5,000.
When the numbers go from up by 20-some percent to 170, I think we can say pretty definitively that those numbers, without any doubt at all, understate the real level of hate crime that's occurring out there.
Florida law says hate crimes involve someone harming another person or his property because of factors including race, sexual orientation, or disability. Potok says, like sexual assaults, official hate crime stats are grossly deflated because more than half of victims never report them. And then he says there's uneven enforcement.
A reason that many police departments don't really pursue hate crime allegations very strongly is that it's much easier to make a case for simple assault or aggravated battery or even murder without going into trying to prove what the motive was.
In 2012, fewer than half of Florida's 67 counties reported any hate crimes at all. Of the 30 reporting counties, most had incidents numbering in the single digits. Orange County stood out with 32 hate crimes. Number two reporter Brevard County had 15. But Melbourne Police Sergeant Sheridan Shelley agrees with Potok that his county's high number shouldn't be taken to definitively label Brevard a hotbed of hate.
It may be because our clerks are trained and very observant when it comes to recognizing hate crimes.
Shelley says the records department is often the front line in identifying hate crimes after an officer files an incident report. He gives a hypothetical in which a boyfriend beats up another man he finds out has been fooling around with his girlfriend.
But during the course of that, the boyfriend uses, hate speech directed at that person, their race or religion. Now, again, the officer is really looking at the basic elements. You have a battery. But with that documented speech and what was said, our records people will recognize that.
But nobody's at this table.
At the Florida State University Student Union, Ebonique Brooks is manning the info table for the Black Student Union.
The Black Student Union definitely addresses hate crimes, especially on campus, because recently there was like a racial slur.
Her group recently held a public forum to discuss racism after a white student recorded a video in the union and posted it on social media, complete with a caption using a derogatory term for black people.
So it's a lot of us, we dance and stuff like that, and it was implied that it was about African Americans, but it was pretty obvious.
That incident wasn't deemed criminal, but university police departments reported 11 hate crimes in 2012. Potok says no one knows for sure how pervasive the problem is and what resources should be dedicated to stopping it. Case in point, the FBI's 2012 hate crime report for Florida lists 26 fewer crimes than Florida's does. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, elected officials could soon face new requirements for showing where they live, and there's a long list of ways they'll be judged.
Where do your bank statements come? Where does your mail come? Where do you spend your time?
Presidential searches at two of Florida's public universities are once again renewing conversation on whether those searches should be closed and who should lead higher education institutions.
As someone who's been in political office, I am not someone who thinks that's necessarily a good training ground for a university president.
After long months of study, including the collection of a number of anecdotes, Clearwater Senator Jack Latvalley this week introduced a bill he says will crack down on lawmakers living outside their districts. As Dan Jastrzebski reports, the bill lists nearly two dozen criteria which may be considered, even though Latvalley says state lawmakers may not be subject to it if and when it passes.
The discussion revolves around a single issue, how lawmakers are allowed to declare where they live. So a bill from Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala and Estero Republican Representative Ray Rodriguez sets out criteria, 20 of them, and then proceeds to say those 20 do not constitute the full list of what may be considered. On that list are what sound like some common sense rationales for judging where someone truly lives, including the address that's listed on their tax returns, the address given to local school districts, and the home where a spouse or children reside. The law also allows someone to be judged on where they get their mail, the same logic used to prove the existence of Santa Claus in the movie Miracle on 34th Street.
Your Honor, every one of these letters is addressed to Santa Claus, and the post office has delivered them to my client. Therefore, the United States government recognizes this man, Kris Kringle, as Santa Claus.
I wouldn't say where your mail is, because I can have my mail sent to your house. And that's my mailing address.
That's Tallahassee State Attorney Willie Meggs, whom Latvala singled out during a Thursday press conference for not being tough enough on politicians who skirt the law.
This would be the kind of thing that a guy like your state attorney here in Leon County, who has moved very aggressively on elected officials in other respects, but never has seemed to have been prone to move on things like this, maybe this kind of a statute would get his attention.
Latvala says it would largely be up to state attorneys to initiate formal complaints against lawmakers, but Meggs says he and his 19 colleagues around the state are mired in residency laws and judicial rulings that frequently contradict one another.
There was a guy living in Georgia who declared his domicile to be in Florida and ran for office in Florida and got elected. And they said that was okay. So, you know, it's kind of like write a dadgum law that says what it means and then means what it says.
Meg says he's seen the same news coverage that Latvala admits led him to file the bill. Tales of lawmakers who live in palatial estates outside their districts but keep smaller properties in the district they represent.
Is that okay? Darned if I know.
Meggs is referring to stories about State Senator Maria Sachs, a woman so much the poster child for allegedly living outside the district she serves that journalists leaving Latvala's press conference Thursday joked the act should be named for her. She did not return calls to her district office seeking comment Friday. But she's not alone, Latvala says.
My guess is in the legislature that we have 8 to 10% of the members of the legislature do not live in their districts.
But here, the law wades back into the murky depths that worry Willie Meggs, since the legislature already has a rule saying it determines who can be among its membership. Latvala says his rule might have to be pared back to affect only local officials. He and Representative Rodriguez say a joint ruling on the matter from House Speaker Will Weatherford and Senate President Don Gates is expected in the next couple weeks. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
Of course, you've probably already heard that Governor Rick Scott has promised to cut the state's budget by $500 million during the upcoming lawmaking session. But that's not to say he's not inclined to spend more money if he thinks it's needed. Today, he reminded an Orlando airport audience of mostly tourism industry people that his budget last year included $63.5 million for tourism promotion.
We made record gains in tourism. And we always have to remember, this is your money. It's our taxpayers' money. So we've got to spend it wisely. But spending it wisely to create more tourists creates more jobs.
Florida's 2013 tourist estimates aren't out yet, but the state welcomed more than 91 million visitors the year before. Governor Scott would like that number to top 100 million in 2014.
To do that, we're going to include $100 million this year in my budget. And we'll go to the legislature at the end of the session. It's your money tax cut budget, but it's $100 million to get more tourists and more jobs for Florida families.
That would work out to around one marketing dollar per visitor. Florida's tourism numbers have been on a steady rise for years, even during the recession that began in 2008. Officials with Visit Florida, the state's official tourism marketing corporation, say that's because the state has been steadily boosting the amount of money it pours into tourism promotion. Those dollars have grown steadily since the terrorist attacks of 2001 brought worldwide tourism to a near standstill. Florida's public universities are having a hard time finding presidents. The hunt for Florida A&Ms took nearly a year, and the search for a president of Florida Atlantic is in its final stages after several fits and starts. Now, as Lynn Hatter reports, some are once again raising concerns about the way Florida finds its public higher education leaders.
In the past few years, there have been several high-level vacancies at Florida's public universities, and in many cases, university trustees have expressed dissatisfaction with replacement candidates. Such was the case at Florida A&M, where shortly before naming Cornell University's Elmira Mangum to the post, trustee Carl White complained about Florida's open record laws.
This is my sixth presidential or some form of a search. I have to say that this one was the most difficult, probably by several factors, based upon the constraints, particularly of the Sunshine Law.
That's a criticism also offered a few years ago when Florida State University was searching for a replacement for then-President T.K. Weatherall. FSU eventually found former National Center of Atmospheric Research Administrator Eric Marin. The state's open record laws make candidates' names and resumes public record. Now there's an effort underway to make those applications off-limits to public eyes. House Bill 135 would exempt searches for public university presidents and other high-level university jobs from the state's Sunshine Law, a move former Florida Board of Regents head Charlie Reed says may be a good thing.
There are a lot of leaders in higher education that are sitting presidents that don't want their name in the newspaper saying that they are interested in a different job, knowing that they're going to be disappointing their board, disappointing people on their campus. And the very best systems that I know don't make public their final group of candidates.
But First Amendment Foundation President Barbara Peterson disagrees.
If you look at the university presidents who are in place now, these people were all hired in the sunshine. And what House Bill 135 seems to be telling us is that we don't have the best university presidents we could get. I want them to find me a better president than President Barron.
Furthermore, Peterson fears such an exemption could be expanded to local political searches as well, dealing a serious blow to the law. And while some people may be hesitant to jump into a presidential search because it exposes them to scrutiny, the circumstances don't appear to scare away politicians. Take the search at Florida Atlantic University, where State Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater is a finalist.
How are you going to make sure that our funding isn't cut in Tallahassee? How are you going to make sure? How are you going to make sure our medical school continues to receive the money it receives from the state? How are you going to make sure we stay relevant once you leave Tallahassee?
Atwater may be the latest politician eyeing a presidency, but he's not the first. FSU's former president T.K. Weatherall was a Florida House Speaker. University of North Florida president John Delaney was mayor of Jacksonville. University of Miami President Donna Shalala was the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, and former state representative Marjorie Turnbull, now a FAMU trustee, says experience with sunshine laws may, in fact, play a part.
One of the reasons I think Florida universities end up with people who've been in political office, but the reason is they're accustomed to the sunshine law. So they don't mind the scrutiny. But if you're a sitting president, you're simply not going to put your name out there and have your board of trustees says, why is it you're not?
Others say at a time when budgets are tight and universities are in competition with each other, finding a politician with connections for the top isn't a bad idea. But Charlie Reed says that, too, comes with its own set of issues.
I've seen institutions get people that have had no experience with politics or legislators, and they just get eaten live. Then the faculty and the students, turn against them. On the other hand, I've seen, leaders from the political side do well, with legislators, but not do well in having faculty and student support.
Florida Atlantic University could name its presidential choice soon. Former U.S. Senator George Lemieux is also among the finalists. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, if you thought the fireworks ended on New Year's Eve, think again. Lawmakers are moving forward with a bill that would clear the way for Floridians to shoot off even more fireworks. Regan McCarthy has that story.
Danny Carpenter owns his own company, D&D Fireworks. But since he's just open a few weeks in the summer and a couple of days around New Year's, he spends the rest of his time selling something else. Carpenter is also the owner of this and a few other tropical smoothie locations around Tallahassee. He says selling fireworks just helps him earn a little extra cash. That, and he says he's always loved those colorful explosions.
And our Christmas stocking was fireworks. In fact, my dad would, Santa Claus would fill a huge box full of fireworks and then take our stockings and just lay them on top of the box.
But Carpenter says people don't buy fireworks as often as they once did. So during the off-season, he doesn't keep them around, except for a few sparklers he keeps on hand for people to use at their weddings. He says because of regulations, keeping the biggest boomers around is expensive. But for those few weeks of the year around July 4th, he says he's got them all.
Gone wild. Hang 'em high. Purple haze.
But right now, under Florida law, it's only legal for residents to use fireworks like those for certain purposes, such as scaring birds away from crops. So before they buy them, people have to sign a waiver agreeing to follow the rules. And lawmakers worry about how that's affecting Florida's businesses. Some suggest people might cross state lines to buy pyrotechnics. And Venice Republican Senator Nancy Dieter says she thinks a lot of buyers just fib and sign the form anyway, which is why she's supporting a measure that would get rid of that rule.
This is the we're done lying bill, and we're just going to say we're going to use it, and we're not holding anybody else harmless.
The Senate version of the bill, sponsored by St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis, repeals the current rule, but limits the sale of fireworks to those 16 years old and older, and creates some requirements about what kinds of insurance a fireworks retailer must carry. Other than that, Brandis says the state's giving local governments the ability to make their own rules about the sale and use of fireworks. But Carpenter says he's not sure what the point of the change is.
I would say that out of 1,000 times of saying, I just need you to fill out this section right here on this form. Out of 1,000 customers, we may have 4 that say, well, I'm not signing that. Okay, well, I'm sorry. Well, I can't sell you these things. So 4 out of 1,000 might have an issue with it. So we'll pick up sales from those 4 people, and I don't think that's going to really matter.
Carpenter says he'd be glad to see the insurance change if it's actually enforced, because he says he thinks it'll help to legitimize the business. But he also says he's worried about the potential impact of local governments creating a patchwork of their own rules. Meanwhile, Florida Fire Chiefs Association member Wayne Watts says he can't imagine the outcome of the change being anything but negative. Watts says despite what some legislators say, the current law is not a farce.
The fact of the matter is, if you sign a waiver saying that you're going to use it for agricultural purposes and you use it otherwise, you are in violation of the law.
Watts says fireworks can be as dangerous as a gun. And he says putting that in the hands of a kid as young as 16 is a mistake. Still, the Florida League of Cities says it's on board with the plan because its members like the idea of more local control. The measure passed its first committee hearing in the Senate. The House version of the bill was scheduled for a hearing the same day, but officials postponed that discussion. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Bank, Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport, and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, committed to helping high school students with disabilities graduate and advance to jobs, post-secondary education, and a bright future. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.